Hello and welcome to the Arsenal Beat. Who would have thought when we launched so long ago that we would get to a stage where this late into a season, we have so many positives to keep discussing. But after a fine 3-0 win at Fulham, that is where we are. I'm Mark Manbryans, and alongside me today to look back at the victory at Craven Cottage, as well as ahead to the visit of Sporting, I'm joined by Simon Collings of the Evening Standard and the Telegraph's Sam Dean. Guys, you were both at Fulham on Sunday. Simon, it's a very strong performance from top to bottom, really, wasn't it?
It was, and it was pretty much the perfect game, I think, that Arteta and Arsenal could have had. Job done in the first half, three goals. Gets to bring Gabriel Jesus on for 15 minutes. Second half was pretty much a non-event. And Fulham, I mean, I've not seen masses of them this season. Sam will have seen them a bit more. But without João Paulinho, that was what everyone was talking about before the game. Certainly Fulham supporters were playing up the significance of him being suspended. And you could see the influence, as much as it was about the way they played, also just the sort of mentality. There was no real bite. They weren't really going at Arsenal. And yeah, given we sort of spoke a few pods ago about fixture congestion and it getting sort of ramping up, this was like a sort of perfect game to have in the middle of a run. And yeah, I mean, I don't think Arteta could have asked for any more when he was leaving Craven Cottage on Sunday.
Sam, I think in amongst the run that they've been on, I mean, there's no disrespect to Leicester or Everton or Villa, but this would have been the game that a lot of people thought, if they're going to slip up, that they might slip up. City have won again, put the pressure back on. But is it a sign of this Arsenal team, this Arsenal squad, where they are at the moment, that never, ever looks like it was going to happen on Sunday as soon as the ball kicked off, did it?
Yeah, completely. And the level of control they had in the first sort of 15, 20 minutes, which I'm sure would have been a time that Fulham had targeted based on the fact that Arsenal had been away in Europe, Lisbon on Thursday night, played quite a end-to-end game, played quite a few of their sort of key players in that game too. And I'm sure Fulham would have thought, let's start quick and get at them and get the crowd on our side. And Arsenal just completely drew the sting out of that. I think in the first 5 minutes, Arsenal basically just kept the ball at the back and just completely stayed patient and measured and composed, and then gradually picked Fulham apart. And I agree with Simon that it was really the perfect day. And I do think if Arsenal go on to win the Premier League this season, and obviously we don't know if they will, and I think a lot of people will still expect Man City to get over the line. I think if they do it, I think that day, the trip to Fulham will be seen as one of the sort of most pleasurable, defining days of that campaign, really. So it was just like underlined all of their strengths as a team. Everyone played well, showed how good the recruitment's been with Trossard excelling in the sort of false nine position. And yeah, coming straight after a Thursday night away trip too, it was the perfect day.
You used the word perfect there. I was about to say that. It was almost a picture-perfect Premier League away game, wasn't it? It was, you know, like you said, they got on the ball straight away, killed any hope of some kind of upset that we were going to see. The game was won by half-time. And one man that was key to that, Simon, was Trossard. Are we surprised, pleasantly surprised, just how much of an impact he's had since he's arrived? I know that there are circumstances which mean he's probably played more minutes than he would have been expecting, but he really has hit the ground running, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's been excellent. And like, I think you're right in saying he's played more than maybe even Trossard thought he would play himself. The Nketiah injury has sort of opened this door, and we'd seen at Brighton that he could play as a false nine and be used like that. I'm sure that wasn't Arteta's primary reason why he signed him, but it's definitely been a huge plus. And I think it has brought the best out of Martinelli. All three of those goals came from the left, and the sort of second and third ones was sort of Trossard peeling out to the left, beating his man and getting the ball in the box. And Martinelli having that sort of freedom, which he didn't really have with Nketiah, who's more of a traditional number nine, has sort of given him a new lease of life. And for Jesus coming back, I think it is going to be difficult getting in the team immediately. I think as he gets back to full fitness, he'll certainly, his case, be stronger. But there's certainly, with these games this week, for me, there's no real need to suddenly throw Jesus in and start him up front when Trossard's playing like he is.
Sam, you wrote a piece yesterday, I believe, about the importance of bringing in players with Premier League experience and Premier League ready, especially, I suppose, in January. you know, they were linked with Mudryk for so long. We see that he's taking time settling at Chelsea. But just run us through the gist of your piece, and also that essentially the upshot is, if you can get, like, to coin a phrase from Boris Johnson, if you can get an oven-ready Premier League player, then you're cooking, aren't you, so to speak?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's been a very clear and dramatic shift in transfer policy. If you look at, so since Arteta was appointed and Edu took full control of transfers, really. So this, the first window for those guys would have been January 2020. There have been 7 transfer windows. And in that, they've signed 21 first team players. 9 of those were from Premier League clubs, or had been, in Ramsdale's case, a Championship club, but had been in the Premier League a few weeks before. Compared to the previous 7 windows, which obviously is Unai Emery's time, and Arsene, end of Arsene Wenger, and during that time when Sven Mislintat was involved with recruitment and Raul Sandeki was there, Arsenal signed only 2 players from the Premier League out of 22 first-team signings. So they've gone from basically 9% Premier League acquisitions to more than 40%, which is obviously a dramatic shift. And they've gone from being, the club in the Premier League with the fewest proportion of signings from Premier League clubs to the club with the highest, which completely flips with Liverpool, which I think is interesting given how many people at Arsenal have sort of looked at Liverpool and their rebuild under Klopp as something that they could almost try and imitate or learn from at the very least. If you think back to that great Klopp team, the one that really went from top 4 challengers to title winners and Champions League winners, it was the likes of Jorginho Wijnaldum, Sadio Mane, Andy Robertson, Virgil van Dijk, who were all signed from Premier League clubs. All probably without a huge amount of fanfare because they weren't unknown quantities and didn't create that much excitement. Those players all proved to be absolutely essential to Liverpool's success. And it's happening again now with, you know, Zinchenko, Jesus, Trossard, obviously, Ben White, another good example. So there's a lot of that happening, I think, at Arsenal now. And I'm sure it's a very deliberate strategy. And I don't know this, but one reason for it, I think, is the fact that Arteta is so young and it's only been a few years since he was playing in this league himself. He knows how intense and ferocious it can be and how physically demanding it is because he felt it himself as recently as sort of 6 or 7 years ago, which is obviously different to any other manager apart from almost Gary O'Neill. So you can almost see that deliberate shift in policy and the way they're targeting players. And it's making a huge difference, especially for, you know, away games against a Fulham team that are quite competitive and difficult to play against. And someone like Trossard knows what he's doing. He's been there before. He's done it before. And you look at the way Mudryk is adapting to the Premier League, and it's obviously taken him some time, as it was always going to do, given he's come from Ukraine. It's very different. And obviously, Mudryk was the first choice and Trossard was plan B. But it's working very well. And Arsenal have got a ready-made player, as you say, Mark, who's oven ready, and they are cooking, as the kids would say.
Yeah, it remains to be seen long term if Mudryk obviously might end up absolutely eclipsing Trossard. But when you're in a title race, you need to get those players in for the end game that season, don't you? And that seems to be what they did in January with him and Jorginho.
One thing I would say as well about Trossard thing is it's almost a strange theme of Arsenal's rebuild under Arteta that they kind of stumbled on some really good things almost by accident. If you think about the day that Emile Smith Rowe came into the team on Boxing Day, that was because Willian was out, I think, with coronavirus or illness or maybe a minor injury, I can't remember exactly. But Arteta was sort of forced into that and it worked and he stuck with it. And obviously, as you guys said, I don't think Trossard was signed to be a false nine. He was signed to be a winger primarily who could play in that role if needed. And then, you know, if Eddie hadn't got injured a few weeks ago, then maybe Eddie Nketiah would have started the last 2 games and we would never have seen Trossard in this role. And so it's almost like circumstances have affected Arsenal and they've pivoted to a second plan and it's worked even better than plan A might have worked. And the same you probably said of Ben White playing right back rather than centre back after William Saliba came in. And I know Arteta said that long term he saw White as a right back, but obviously no one knew how good Saliba would be until they saw him this summer. So it does seem like that keeps happening, which I think is testament to just the strength of the system and the strength of the environment at the club, that things can go wrong, wrong in sort of quotation marks, but Arsenal are quite adaptable and fluid now and able to fix it. And in some cases, the fixing the problem has actually made it even better than it was before.
I think it's fair to say Trossard's at a certain level. The likes of Jesus, Zinchenko, Premier League winners are at another level. Simon, how good was it, do you think, for that squad to see Jesus back? You look at Instagram afterwards and most of those young players were putting up pictures, just walking around the pitch with him. Chances he should have probably scored towards the end, which, you know, we saw that towards the end before he got injured, that he was on a bit of a barren run. But just having him back in around the squad will do them no harm, will it?
No, it's a huge boost. And as Wenger would say, you know, like a new signing, having someone like that around. But for Jesus, it's just, you could see it with the away fans as well, you know, the cheering basically every one of his touches. I think for those players, they see the value in what Jesus brings. You know, it's no coincidence that Arsenal or Arteta made him a vice-captain when he came in this summer. And that was something that I think might have been overlooked, his role as a leader. And even when he's been injured, I think he's played a really big role in that, in sort of stepping up and trying to help people. You know, he hasn't been playing, but he's been around the place as much as possible. You know, we've seen him there on match days, going into the dressing room. And we had sort of said, hadn't we, that, you know, I wonder if you're Arsenal, do you just get him on the bench a bit earlier, even if you're not going to play him, just for his sheer presence, to have him around the place. And yeah, I think for that squad to have him back in the mix is huge. And I suspect he'll be in the squads for Thursday and Sunday. And again, as we've said, you know, with Trossard, Arteta can just give him sort of half an hour, 35 minutes. He's not going to go to Brazil for the international break. So he's going to have 2 weeks back at London Colney to, you know, work on his fitness even more. And then he's going to be fit and firing for the run-in from April. So it's worked out, I think, as well as Arsenal could have done. And if you look at it in just pure points, they were 5 points clear of City when he got injured. He's back in the team and they're still 5 points clear of City. And if you'd have said that to any Arsenal fan, I don't think they'd have believed you that would be the case.
Yeah, I think there's also that thing with Sunday as well, isn't there? We keep saying it was the perfect game. When you're that far clear and the points are so wrapped up, that's a perfect chance to get. You're not bringing him on hoping that he's going to come back from injury and win you a game of football. Winning games of football, Sam, on the road, without wishing to go all Lawrence Well and Bowen on you here, it seems to be a bit down to changing rooms, apparently. Talk to us about the changing room on Sunday. There's photos of clocks. We've heard different things about what Arteta's done. We've seen on the documentary different things he's tried. They all seem to be working now. But what are your understandings of the clock and things that Arteta's tried to do this season when Arsenal go on the road?
Yeah, so a theme of this season, and I think also towards the end of last season too, is Arsenal quite keen to make the dressing room and away grounds feel as homely as possible. And they've got these posters. I think one of them says identity with a sort of graphic with all the Arsenal players' faces on them. One of them says unity, which obviously are some of the key words that Arteta talks about in press conferences and clearly behind the scenes too. And this weekend they had a clock, which was a replica of the famous Arsenal clock above the clock end, which I think Herbert Chapman brought in to Highbury in the 1930s or late 20s. And the hands were 11 and 2 at the end of the game when they will pose with it. And my understanding is that was a reference to 11 games to go. So you could call it a countdown clock if you want in those terms. But yeah, you're right. We saw it in the documentary, things like the light bulb, which were quite strange, but you know, you play a lot of games. You've got to keep the players' minds engaged and not just do the same thing all the time. And also I know this season, for example, that they've done a lot of stuff pre-game, sort of before the team gets to the stadium, where they try and either lighten the mood or, you know, play a couple of games or just generally try and get the players switched on or thinking in different ways and not just doing the same old thing every single time. So it's something that Arteta thinks about and his coaching staff think about. And, you know, if they win the league, we can say it's one of the great reasons behind their success. And if they don't, then it's irrelevant. That's how these things normally work. But it's clearly having a nice positive effect, you'd expect. And yeah, the clock's quite cool. It's a bit of Arsenal history and the image is quite a powerful one for sort of Arsenal fans. They know the clock. They see the clock every week at the stadium. And yeah, I don't see any issue with it. It seems quite cool to me.
I do wonder as well if it's a bit of a legacy of having a manager in place for so long that the players there now completely bought into what Arteta is trying to do. If you chop and change managers with different ideas, you know, the light bulb, like you said, the light bulbs, the speakers, the clock, so those managers get left out of town if your dressing room is too strong for a manager coming in. But clearly all of those young players have bought into exactly what Mikel Arteta is trying to do. And Simon, we were all in Lisbon last week. That first leg against Sporting was very, very chaotic. Obviously, poised at 2-2. It felt almost Unai Emery-esque in the sense that it was very chaotic, Europa League kind of game. How do you see Thursday night going? It should really be Arsenal's for the taking, shouldn't it?
It should be. I think we saw on Thursday, you know, certainly comparing it to Sunday, the difference when you play the sort of rotated side and the first team. Just, you know, I think Sam made a good point when we were there, and also in his piece, that when that spine of the team isn't quite there, the control is a bit lacking. And they had that at Fulham, and on Thursday in Lisbon, they didn't really have it. But I think we all sort of said afterwards that kind of felt like Sporting's night. If they were going to do something in the tie, they needed to come away with that with a lead. They're not going to have Quates. I think they're missing one of the midfielders too. So I think for Arsenal, it is set up for them ideally at home. I'll be intrigued to see how strong a team he goes for, given the Palace game is on Sunday. But then after that, they do have sort of 2 weeks off. I know players are on international duty, but I would be surprised if there is heavy rotation, really. I know a lot of fans will again, sort of themes have this idea of focusing on the Premier League, but it's just not what Arteta does. And I think he made 6 changes last week. I think I could easily see him making less than that on Thursday and trying to do what he did against Fulham, where, you know, he took Saka off with 20 minutes to go, which is pretty unheard of. But if they can get sort of 2 goals up against Sporting within an hour and you can rest players, I think that might be the case. But I would think the pattern of the game will not be as chaotic. I think Arsenal will have more control. And I think they really should have enough to get it done on Thursday.
Sam, it was an interesting point about that, the spine of the team, isn't it? But I just want to, I mean, literally while Simon was talking, I'm just making a couple of notes, and I want to put some names to you and then make my point and see if you agree. Alisson, Van Dijk, Fabinho, Salah, Ederson, Diaz, De Bruyne, Haaland, De Gea, Varane, Casemiro, Rashford. That was the only time I had the 3 clubs I did. Arguably, there might be different players, but if you look to those as the spine of all those other teams, and you suddenly take them all out, they'd all struggle, wouldn't they? So I don't think it's not an Arsenal problem that if you rest the whole spine of your team, you're going to struggle, is it? That's certainly not something we can only say is an Arsenal issue.
No, completely agree. The point I was probably badly made last week is that if you look at the sort of down the middle of the team in the core of it, you've probably got Ramsdale, Gabriel, Partey, Odegaard, Jesus as the sort of 5-man spine. Obviously, and that's not trying to say that Saka's not important, we know he is, but just sort of positioning in the heart of the team. And what I think is really interesting and encouraging for Arsenal is that this season they have at various times proven that they can cope without one or two of those players at once. Obviously, Jesus has been missing for a long time. Partey's missed a couple of games. Even Odegaard's missed a couple. You know, they've shown at times that they can cope without two or three of the 5-man spine. But against Lisbon last week, they had none of that 5-man spine in the team. And the only player who really is part of that spine, if you will, is Saliba. And I thought he was by far Arsenal's best player on Thursday night. So that kind of showed that, well, I mean, I think for Liverpool, for example, you take out one of them, like Van Dijk or Salah, I think it has a huge impact. Whereas Arsenal have got to a position this year where they can lose Jesus for 3 months and be fine. But yeah, I think without all 5 of those players against Lisbon, they were looked a bit chaotic and a bit open. And it was a bit sort of scary at times, wasn't it? And, you know, Turner didn't exactly breed confidence. Kivior didn't exactly breed confidence either, especially from that first goal from the corner. So it's a bit different. And Jorginho is a very good player, as we've discussed, but he's not Thomas Partey, and he can't cover the ground in the same way. And yeah, losing all five of them at once, or deliberately resting all five of them at once, was probably a bit much for the team to handle. But I can't see Arteta doing that again in the second leg. I think he's going to want to win this and crack on.
I think I said to Simon on the night, it was even a bit Oxford, wasn't it? Oxford-y in the FA Cup. He made so many changes. And then he had to bring on, I think it was Xhaka and Zinchenko had to come on to almost just make sure they got over the line. So there clearly is that, not an issue with the rotated side. But Simon, do you think it's a case of, we mentioned it on here before, that is there such a drop-off? Is it just ring rust for players like Kivior making his debut after only months on the training ground and players not used to minutes? It's or a combination of both, maybe?
Yeah, I think it is part of that. And you watch the sort of the quote-unquote first 11 and basically the patterns of play and what they're doing. Everyone knows exactly where they are and what, you know, and how they need to be and what position they need to be in. And you don't really get that when you rotate, you know, six players in the team, but it's to be expected, really. I think certain players like Vieira have looked good when they've been one change in the 11 or two changes. But when you make six, and I think Arteta himself sort of, you know, accepts that. And he made the point afterwards saying, you know, you're going to have this, but if you don't expose them, you know, when are you going to be able to do it? I think the argument some supporters might make would be that you've left it too late to expose these players and they've not really played, you know, they've not really played enough minutes. You look at someone like Kiwior, he's signed in January, he's only just got on the pitch now. It's no surprise he's going to be rusty. These players will be rusty if they don't play. The same with someone like Matt Turner. So I think that's what's going to happen. And Arteta will have taken the decision that it will get them over the line even if they make that many changes. But for me, yeah, a big part of it is rust. And perhaps because they haven't rotated as much during the season as other sides would, you do see a bit more rust when you change it compared to someone like a Manchester City, who notoriously Pep is quite happy to sort of nick, chop and change it week by week.
Time now for Guess the Gooner. You should know the rules by now, but I will quickly go over them. I will read out a list of clues and hints linking to a former Arsenal player. It is up to Sam and Simon to try and work out who is being described and if they are more commonly and recognisably known than Stefan Schwartz. Yes, we had the first ever non-answer last time round, so no pressure on you boys to get us back on the horse this time round as we play Guess the Gooner. I played 251 times for Arsenal, scoring 10 goals.
I'll have a guess. Laron.
Incorrect. Wrong.
That's really odd, because I was going to say Lauren. Genuinely.
That's the right answer. I won 3 FA Cups and 3 Community Shields during my time with the Gunners.
Goran Kashani.
Incorrect. Wrong.
Nacho Monreal.
Simon Colling, second guess yet again.
I don't believe it.
I cannot believe. I thought I'd better make it easy. I think I might have made it too easy. Monreal.
Surprised he played 250 games, but I was probably the same as Dina, where I was thinking he's going to be in that era of like the 2014 to 2017 where they had the good FA Cup run and Community Shield run.
I'm glad, boys, I set my alarm 20 minutes earlier to write a Guess the Gooner this morning. I'll give you the clues, Sam. Just shout out if you'd have got their arbitrary now, but shout out if you'd have got them. My new favourite kind of clue. My teammates included Ruud van Nistelrooy, Cesar Azpilicueta and Alexander Isak. Nice.
Yeah, I would have got that from Isak, I think.
Nice smorgasbord of players.
Sociedad clue.
Correct. I was capped 22 times by my country. I was a runner-up in a Confederations Cup final. This is a great one because this is an Arsene Wenger quote and it's a dreadful quote. When I joined the club in 2013, Arsene Wenger said of me, he is a technically gifted player, a good crosser in the final third and strong in the air. I don't think you'd associate much of that with Nacho Monreal.
I wouldn't classify him as being good in the air. He's like a small left back.
I'm a left back.
That reminds me of when we went to Ostersund's v Arsenal and the Swedish journalists asked Wenger, who in the Ostersund's team do you most fear? Or, you know, who are you most worried about or looking out for? And he went, the right winger's got a good cross on him.
Fantastic. Graham Potter's right winger. What a trip that was, by the way. Take me back. Guys, thank you for that. Simon ruined another guest Aguna there with your knowledge. We'll get back to some more early 90s players next time, I think, to drag it out a bit. Get Nick Ames back on because he's normally useless. We shall be back on Friday with a better guest Aguna, with hopefully a Europa League quarterfinal to look forward to and the visit of Crystal Palace to come. Until then, stay safe, everyone.